walk the streets, you'll have no cares. If you walk the lines and not the squares, as you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole. It's written on the rainbow in letters made of gold. Written on the rainbow, there's wisdom to behold. My friend, the little sparrow, flew close enough to see. Written on the rainbow is this philosophy. When you walk the streets, you'll have no cares. If you walk the lines and not the squares, as you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole.
Written on the rainbow, in letters made of gold. Written on the rainbow, there's wisdom to behold.
My friend, the little sparrow, agrees it must be so. Little angels wrote it, so folks on earth would know. When you walk the streets, you'll have no cares. If you walk the line and not the squares, as you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole. You'll have no cares if you walk the lines and not the squares. As you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole.
Watch the donut, not the hole.
I am off to jolly England, where bulldogs all wear pants. Off to Bango Bango, where alligators dance. My friend, the little sparrow, will take me when he flies. Even to the rainbow, to read with my own eyes.
When you walk the street, you'll have no cares. If you walk the lines and not the squares, as you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole.
It's written on the rainbow in letters made of gold. Written on the rainbow, there's wisdom to behold. My friend, the little sparrow, flew close enough to see. Written on the rainbow is this philosophy.
When you walk the streets, you'll have no cares. If you walk the lines and not the squares, as you go through life, make this your goal. Watch the donut, not the hole. Watch the donut, not the hole.
Hi everybody, happy Tuesday, it's Myrtle Hour, this is Christy. I made it, I've been awake for 12 hours, oh 11 at this point, this is amazing. No, 13, let me go backwards, see I'm really tired. Something about waking up and getting going at 5 a.m. that just kicks your ass, but I'm getting used to it. Hang on, I need to sip my Thai coffee. Thanks, Faux87, for keeping Myrtle Hour going. Yeah. I'm peeking. There we go, I should back off a little. Welcome. That was the donut song by Mr. Burl Ives. I mention that every time because I think he's amazing. And if you don't know him, I dare you to Google him. That's probably the only time I'll ever dare you to Google anybody. I lie. That's not true. Anyway, so I got a good show for you. I've lined up a bunch of different sort of what I've been calling electro soul. Although after a little bit of research, I realized that the sort of industry definition of electro soul is much less soul than I imagined and far more electro. Which isn't terrible, but I'm not going to be playing what you would find if you were to look up that online. Instead, I got a whole host of other exciting things, past and future, as well as a few exciting things from... Who do we got coming up? The Post-Futurist Manifesto from Franco Berardi, sort of famous Italian posi-anarchist. I just made that one up. We should all be posi-anarchists. Let's start a movement. Kill them with kindness, baby. And then I'm also going to read the Cyber Communist Manifesto by Mr. Richard Barbrook, who is a pretty amazing guy over in the UK. Sort of came out of the punk scene in the 90s and became a cyber communist. And then I also am going to read maybe a little bit from Richard Brautigan. He wrote the poem All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, which was originally published in the Whole Earth Catalog in 1998. And also, that name, All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, is the title of one of Adam Curtis's most recent documentary series, which I've played a little bit of. I think you can still find it on Vimeo. Maybe I'll play the intro to that. If nothing else, you should watch Adam Curtis movies because the soundtracking is really kind of perfectly non sequitur. So I'm going to start with a little bit of music because I literally just arrived and I'm tired, baby. It's been a heck of a day. Everybody I know is working their butts off these days, so for all of you out there living the dream or working towards living the dream, I'm going to play this song. It's called Wild Dreams. It's by a band called Ageless. I actually just discovered this band today because they often feature a DJ by the name of Wildebeest, Wildebeast. On their albums. He's not featured on this one, however, it's still a pretty darn good track. So let me, I'm trying to run Spotify off your phone is like, I don't know what it's like trying to run Spotify off your phone. All right, here you go. I hope you guys enjoy this one.
Here are centered the hope and aspirations and faith of the entire human race. We'll be right back. do not stand here as advocate for any cause you call, for the issues are fundamental and reach quite beyond the realm of policy consideration. I trust, therefore, that you will do me the justice of receiving that which I have to say as fully expressing the considered viewpoint of a fellow American. I address you with neither rancor nor bitterness. In the fading twilight of life,
called Suburbs. It's by Mr. Little Jeans. In the suburbs I learned to drive, and you told me you'll never survive. Grab your mother's keys, we're leaving. You always seem so sure that one day we'd be fighting in a suburban war. You're part of town against mine, I saw you standing on the opposite shore. But by the time the first bombs fell, we were already born. We were already, already born. Sometimes I can't believe it, I'm moving past the feeling. Sometimes I can't believe it, I'm moving past the feeling again. Kids wanna be so hard, but in my dreams we're still screaming and running through the yard. And all of the walls that they built in the 70s finally fall. And all of the houses they built in the 70s finally fall. Nothing at all, it meant nothing. Sometimes I can't believe it, I'm moving past the feeling. Sometimes I can't believe it, I'm moving past the feeling into the rain. Can you understand why I want a daughter while I'm still young? I want to hold her hand, show her some beauty before the damage is done. But if it's too much to ask, if it's too much to ask, then send me a song. Under the overpass, in the parking lot, I'm still waiting, sorry, fast. So move your feet from our pavement and into the grass, 'cause it's already past, already, already past. Oh, caught me. I was rocking out with the monitors on, being super unprofessional. Please stand by. I'm having a technical difficulty. I'd like to play this song that didn't make it into the playlist yet. My computer door is a bit funky, so I gotta go back over here. This always happens, so I hope you like the, you know, I hope you don't mind the inner dialogue becoming external. It's actually, like, totally how I roll. And I don't just mean that about inner dialogue. I mean that about, like, life. Kind of game for the vulnerability. So basically what I'm doing right now is I tried to play something off of my computer. But there's something wrong with either the headphone jack or, like, maybe I still have malware on there that is creating problems. Because every once in a while I'll plug in to the DJ mixer and shit don't work. The sound doesn't come out. And yes, the volume is up, so before any of you out there try to give me that batteries backwards crap. I checked that. Okay, let me get to the song I want. Because I'm also going to do, I'm going to read to you guys. Okay, let's try this one. So this track is called Be the Dancer, Be the Dreamer. This is by local artist White Rainbow, aka Adam Forkner. It's not the past, but the future that determines the present. This is a text from David Raymond Conroy's recent piece. What I'm really hoping for is that I'll find the answer. Though the answer to what, I couldn't tell you. Besides, I'm absolutely aware that there's no such thing as the answer. Even if there were, it would not be out there. I'm looking in the wrong place for a very specific yet totally unknown thing that doesn't exist. This non-existent, impossible answer would also not present itself as an answer. It'd just be a thing amongst other things. Now don't get me wrong, I know full well that this thing does not exist either, but the conceptual change from an answer to a thing does, at some level, make its existence seem more plausible. Also, the quality that made this thing the thing would not be entirely in it. It would be in me and it, somewhere between us both, in our interaction. And I'd be able to recognize it if I saw it. You see, that's how it starts. The internet is finite, but ever expanding, and all it holds is information. So at some level, buried within my resolute fundamental skepticism, I seem to be convinced that it might hold some indication of, or at least vaguest wake of, the thing, whatever that thing is for me. So I want to find this thing, I want to fall in love with it, and evidently, I imagine that it is out there and can be found on the internet. I want this thing in the way that I have loved others before. The inequality of the comparison is that these things revealed themselves slowly. I saw them, desired them, saw something in them or something of them in me. I looked at them, inside them, threw them at other things, and this all took time and happened quite slowly and involuntarily. And as it happened, I was at once aware and unaware of it. My mode of engagement with things on the net feels like speed dating phantoms. The conditions in which I'm trying to fall in love make falling in love impossible. Of course, as with all great addictive substances, the thing that's making you ill promises to hold the cure. The compulsion to continue is the hope that the search will not be in vain, that I've just been unlucky so far, that if I stop now, I'll miss it. But because the net is so easy to float around in and is at once ever-growing and seemingly boundless, it holds the possibility to access totally new and unexpected things constantly. And this is why it encourages me, a sense of, I'll know it when I see it. This can be a good attitude because you open up yourself to a kind of looking, which is about spotting slippages and connections and possibilities. And this feels like it rewards ingenuity. but almost everything on the internet encourages us to wander and examine endlessly. That there's always a next thing or a new update means that I find it almost impossible to focus enough to see the present thing. This sense of a kind of eternally elusive thing I want makes it extraordinarily hard to actually process the information that's in front of me on the screen. And this spills over into the real world, and even buying hardware, we are forever worried about its future and impending obsolescence. So drifting through the web looking for this elusive thing is itself nothing more than shopping, I realize. And this seems particularly repellent. Part of me, at least initially, wants to say that it isn't shopping because there's no profit, no parting with cash in order to buy. But that falls at the first hurdle. The line between shopping and browsing is paper thin. I get more than ever and very rarely give. I don't buy the music I listen to or rent the films I see. I just take them, I stream them, I absorb them as references, and then doubtless disseminate them as recommendations. That we choose which YouTube videos to share and what to like on Facebook in an effort to construct and manage our appearance seems to be precisely no different to wearing music t-shirts when you're a teenager or being on trend within your peer group. I drift down the net looking for things to show, and it's justified under the veil of being an art practice. And this is totally legitimate. Since the dawn of the ready-made, we've been aware that an ordinary object can be elevated to the dignity of a work of art by the mere choice of an artist. Duchamp had the foresight to say he wanted to avoid the work being reduced to matters of taste, either good or bad. On the Wikipedia page for shopping addiction, or omniomania, to give it its proper title, the definition is positioned on the cultural timeline. Given that consumer culture has an increasing impact on our psychological well-being and our sense of identity, compulsive buying has to be considered as a significant modern or postmodern addiction. It's about trying to take control and position yourself as a valid agent. It's about establishing yourself as your own author, defining your content, context, and peers. The endless next cycle I feel when I'm on the internet seems to fit seamlessly into the capitalism's logic of mass consumption. So much of programming and the designing of interfaces is about delivering you what you want, as based on what everyone else wanted. So search engine results are displayed according to popularity. Sites display how many visitors they've had, events claim future attendees, and the highlighting of who's online now is a second-by-second affirmation that you've made the right choice. Somehow, all this display of recognition manages to generate is status anxiety and the desire for a peculiar type of momentary obscurity. The desire to be the first to discover something that goes on to be popular so that we can then reject it. I don't just want to be the one to find something. I then pretend I don't know anything about it at all while hoping that the implication of my apparent ignorance is registered as coming from a secure position somewhere apart from it. Scarcity, demand, and value go hand in hand. The almost boundless pool of free information is immediately taken for granted. The logic of capitalism suggests that anything given away for free is worth nothing. But the sheer volume of free stuff on the internet threatens to upend the boat. Traditionally, there's a scale where if something was more expensive, it was both worth more and yet harder to access, and as a result, it's more desired. I'm gonna put this back up here. Now, however, there's so much available for free that it's totally screwed our sense of value and our sense of worth. Hard to do it with headphones on. I've come to expect that anything that can be digitally distributed will and should be totally gratis, and I'm unprepared to pay for anything. Does that mean I think everything is worthless? I don't know, but I worry that at some point it does. So if I do purchase something out of choice, it's done with the spirit of a charitable donation. There's something in the description of this perpetually non-commercial skimming state as being trance-like instead of engaging. You become totally fluid in your interactions. Existing in a state of persistent transience requires constant assessment, navigation, and repositioning. It's this sense of being engulfed and slept along with no real control, together with the consistent sense of disappointment that comes from being so incredibly well supplied, but thoroughly ineffective, that leads to a state of mild anxiety whenever browsing without an absolutely clear aim. There's a strange process of what feels to be, at least from where I'm standing now, a maladjustment. The innate speed of movement in any and all directions is disorienting to such a degree that the only stable point of reference is the self. It's so narcissistic. My experience of the web is so much about me, about what I want, about my actions and reactions, and every time anything is chosen, it's logged as the thing or type of thing that is wanted, so that next time it can be chosen again with even less thought. Even the vaguest interest is noticed and cross-reference for demographic significance and compartmentalization, so you can be told to look again, now at something else, so this also appeals to you. But the paradoxical conflation between narcissism and the elusive and fracturing notion of the self has become so involuted that a snake which eats its own tail is much too clean an analogy. The contemporary Ouroboros should be a snake slowly turning itself inside out, spilling its guts as it looks through its transparent flesh for approval. There's an enormous amount of research, all of which says that the internet's changing the way we think and behave. In the way that a hammer becomes part of its user when it's held, our use of the internet is rewriting our brain to enable us to integrate more efficiently. We're changing so we can work better together. The amount of time we spend connected, or at least with the ability to connect at a moment's notice, makes technology seem more and more like a prosthesis. If I go out without my phone, not only do I physically feel its absence in my pocket, but I feel actively disconnected. And when we are united, and I doubtless discover I've missed nothing, but instead of relief, I feel disappointment. This isn't over a missed conversation or interaction, I don't think. It's almost just about numbers. In that way, I shouldn't feel relief or disappointment. It's just a fact. It has no inherent worth. But the statistics of relations have become so attached to value. These are all just barely developed fragments of ideas. I see now as I read through it that it all sounds so awful, pessimistic, and defeatist. And that's absolutely not what I wanted. But I think that recognizing the problem is the first step. Oop. What happened? Is the first step. Oh, we got a dirty pot on the board. Silly old console. That's absolutely not what I wanted, but I think that recognizing the problem is the first step to finding a solution. And I don't mean a solution you understand. There are no answers, but I want to be positive. Scottish-American talk show host Craig Ferguson said, speaking of being an alcoholic, "I don't have a drinking problem, I have a thinking problem." And I think that he's making a pertinent point. Sitting in front of the computer thinking, what should I look up next? Or just checking and rechecking for changes and updates and new input. The endless checking has a perfect corollary in fast food. So full of flavor enhancers and stimulants, it's designed to get us to eat more and more and more and never feel even full as we pile on fat that will cripple us and make us feel dreadful and stupid and ugly and sick. And smartphones from the mobile operator three are sold on the fact that they come with all-you-can-eat data. This can't continue. The internet's a tool, and I want it put to a use and to do so in good faith. So technology only enables, it doesn't opine. It is, in this sense, liberal. It has an entity. It does everything, as an entity, it does everything possible to deliver the path of least resistance. And the resistance must come from us. We must form more important and useful questions. And these questions cannot be from individuals. The linear models cannot survive erect. We're developing away from them, not just technologically, but mentally. Each individual can facilitate the sustainability of much larger and more diffuse questions than were imaginable in the past. And I'm not talking about third-wave politics or Randian individualism. I think that empathy and engagement are going to be key if we're going to be able to proceed with any control. We share a common future. We have to stay switched on. And we can only do this if we're not just connected in attendance or some other marker, but genuinely engaged with each other. I have to open up to be able to try and understand the positions of others. We must let go. It's responsibility to let myself fall. Okay. So that was a really great text. I love that text. That's from a British artist named David Raymond Conroy. Oh, I got it. I'm going to put on some more music and then I have to send a text message. Okay. Sorry. It's really hard to multitask some days, and my silly phone is not cooperating today. This is La Ritonelle by Sebastian Tellier. Breakbot, Baby I'm Yours, featuring Ifran. This other song's good. We're just gonna do this one.
Thank you.
Okay, so this one doesn't really conform to the electro soul, but it's good background music. It's called Too Insistent, and it's the Trentemolo remix. What's wrong with you? What is it? Okay, so I'm gonna read a poem from Richard Brautigan. And this is from the Whole Earth catalog, which if you don't know it, you should know it. It's fucking incredible. It was kind of like the internet before the internet. It was this large format magazine that came out that was just like lists of books about things that would move things forward, or places you could learn how to do electronics, or like biotech hobby kits where you could splice your skin cells with octopus cells and make glowing skin you could reattach. So anyways, this is from Richard Brautigan. It's called All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace. I like to think, and the sooner the better, of a cybernetic meadow where mammals and computers live together in mutually programming harmony, like pure water touching the sky. I like to think it has to be of a cybernetic ecology where we, free of our labors and joined back to nature, return to our mammal brothers and sisters and all watched over by machines of loving grace. So following that is a text called The Cyber Communist Manifesto, and it's by Richard Barbeck. A specter's haunting the net, the specter of communism. Whatever their professed political beliefs, every user dreams of the digital transcendence of capitalism. Yet, at the same time, even the most dedicated leftists can no longer truly believe in communism. The horrors of totalitarianism have discredited its promises of social emancipation. Seizing this opportunity, the prophets of American neoliberalism are now laying claim to the future. The adoption of information technologies will lead to the privatization and deregulation of all economic activities. The freedoms of the information society will be created by an elite of entrepreneurs, technocrats, and ideologues. Needing to popularize their prophecies, right-wing gurus emphasize that every high-tech profession can compete to join the emerging digital aristocracy. Above all, they predict that everyone will eventually enjoy the technological marvels currently only available to the lucky few. In the late 1990s, the prophets of American neoliberalism measure our progress towards utopia through increases in the ownership of digital artifacts: home computers, net connections, mobile phones, laptops. Ironically, this right-wing futurism echoes the preconceptions of Stalinist communism. In the former Soviet Union, the enlightened minority was also leading the ignorant masses towards eventual emancipation. Any suffering caused by the introduction of new technologies was justified by the promise of future liberation. During the 1930s, Joseph Stalin similarly measured progress towards utopia through the rising output of modern projects: steel, cars, tractors, and machine tools. Although the Soviet Union has long disappeared, the ideologues of American neoliberalism are still inspired by the Stalinist version of communism. According to most politicians, executives, and pundits, the net is founded upon the buying and selling of information. As in other cultural industries, intellectual labor within cyberspace must be enclosed into commodities and protected by copyright. However, computer-mediated communications was never designed for trading information. On the contrary, the scientists who invented the net were working within the academic gift economy. And as a consequence, they embedded the free distribution of information within the technical structures and social mores of the internet. Over time, the charmed circle of users has slowly grown from scientists through hobbyists to the general public. And crucially, each new member doesn't just observe the technical rules of the system, but also adheres to certain social conventions without even thinking about it. People continually circulate information between each other for free. By giving away their own personal efforts, net users always receive the results of much greater amounts of labor in return from others. So instead of needing a market, people can now work together by circulating gifts between each other. Although many online activities are trivial, some collaborations are creating very sophisticated projects, such as the Linux operating system and interactive music pieces. So despite their power and wealth, the multimedia multinationals are unable to impose the commodification of intellectual labor within cyberspace. At the dawn of the new millennium, net users are developing a much more efficient and enjoyable way of working together, cyber communism. I'm gonna finish this. Our next DJ is in, but I really want to finish this text. So I'm trying to get to a Nicholas Jaar song. This is called Mi Mujer, which is my woman. In earlier times, the abolition of capitalism was envisaged in apocalyptic terms. Revolutionary uprisings, mass mobilizations, and modernizing dictatorships. In contrast, net users are engaged in the slow process of superseding capitalism. In this dialectical movement, high-tech neoliberals perfect the existing relations of production by developing e-commerce, work as commodity. So reacting against the enclosure of cyberspace, left-wing activists celebrate the piracy of copyright material within the online potluck, waste as gift. For those nostalgic for ideological certainty, there can be no compromise between these contradictory visions of the net. Yet the synthesis of these dialectical opposites is happening for pragmatic reasons. The low cost of entry into e-commerce is due to the absence of proprietary barriers within the net. And the rapid expansion of high-tech gift economy is facilitated by hardware and software sold by large companies. Above all, net users always adopt the working methods which are most beneficial to their own interests. Sometimes they'll engage in e-commerce. On most occasions, they will prefer to collaborate within the high-tech gift economy, and many social activities are already organized by voluntary labor and with donated resources. Now, with the advent of the net, this gift economy is challenging market competition at the cutting edge of modernity. Living within a prosperous society, many people are no longer solely motivated by financial rewards. If they have sufficient time and money, they'll also work to gain the respect of their peers for their efforts. And within the net, people are developing the most advanced form of collective labor, work as gift. During the last 200 years, the intimate bonds of kinship and friendship have simultaneously inhibited and underpinned the impersonal relationships needed for market competition. The modern has always coexisted with the traditional, and now within cyberspace, the exchange of commodities is being both intensified and prevented by the circulation of gifts. The most modern synthesis of the hyper-modern. So far from needing leadership to be a heroic elite, ordinary people can now successfully construct their own digital future. In the age of the net, cyber communism is a mundane, everyday experience. So our next DJ is in. So I'm gonna work on getting her set up. And thanks for listening, guys. I hope you had a good Tuesday. I didn't even get to Franco Berardi. I really wanted to talk about him. Maybe you guys can look up the Post-Futurist Manifesto. It's from 2009, so it's a little bit more contemporary than the Richard Barbrook text I just read. Well, have a good night. Thanks. We'll be right back.
Por acá, por allá y por allá, por allá.